Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, Glass Cannon Nation? It is another episode of Cannon Fodder Friday. It's Friday, January 15th, 2021. I'm your good buddy, Joe O'Brien. And with me today is my old friend, my old pal, who is actually responsible for getting me back into tabletop RPGs. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Skid Meyer. Skid!
Hello! What's up?
How you doing? Dude, you bring your own effects to the show and everything. I mean, this is the way to do it. This is the way to do it. High quality guests. That's what I like to procure here for the FOD.
Right. Energy. That's what I bring. Boom!
For the audio audience, that was, was that Jackie Robinson crushing a Cthulian monster alien?
Crushing the Dark Lord Cthulhu with his baseball bat. One of the coolest gifts I've ever seen in my life. When I saw that happen on Lovecraft Country, I was like, this is the most amazing image I have ever been exposed to. This is catered directly to me. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, really smart, really clever, and yeah, just genius, and just so applicable to so much of our work. Like, you could throw that gif up so often, and it is appropriate so many times. We are very excited to have Skid here today, because we got a ton to talk about. We had Troy on last week, and we talked about the SideQuest Side Sesh finale. We're going to get a little Skid input on the SideQuest Side Sesh finale, as well as, of course, delving into a little Cyberpunk Red. I see that your background there, Skid, is cyberpunky. This is what you had on the other night when we recorded episode 2 of Cyberpunk Red. So very, very happy to talk to you more about that. And of course, I want to touch a little bit on Legacy. I want to talk, can we talk about Raiders a little bit? I don't know, maybe. And of course, your streaming stuff, your GCN Employee Lounge. You're a very active member of this network, Skid. You're on a lot of shows.
Yeah, it's right. People pay my bills, so I gotta give it back.
Gotta show up and play. That's what I gotta do. But yeah, lots to talk about today. I do, as always, want to warn everybody that Cannon Fodder can have spoilers. Be tread lightly, or proceed with caution, I guess I should say. We will be talking about things that have happened several weeks ago to even just last week, and we cover it in pretty good detail sometimes. So be aware that there may be spoilers, spoiler warning. And then as far as listener mail goes, we will have a listener mail section today, but sadly we are... we have to pre-record this Cannon Fodder due to a scheduling conflict. So those of you that are watching on Twitch Live, thank you so much for watching. But unfortunately, we can't take questions straight from the chat today, because actually, as you are watching this, Skid and I are preparing to record another game that we have to play today. It's the only way that we can get it done. So unfortunately, it bumped up against the FOD, so we had to pre-record it. But nonetheless, I did reach out on Twitter. People got back to me. I'm excited. We will have some questions for Skid and for myself. And honestly, these are some good questions, so I'm looking forward to getting into them. So yeah, let's just get started right out of the gate with kind of the, I think, the biggest news of the week, which is that Norse Foundry put out a shirt with a quote that you said.
I was very surprised, because we got the shirts in the mail and I was just like, oh cool, Norse Foundry shirts. I have a lot of t-shirts, so let's put these with the rest. And then I pull it out to wear it. And I was like, oh, my name is on this in the thing.
That's right. I just wanted to thank our friends at Norse Foundry. Sneak that in there for sending us some t-shirts. Appreciate you guys. And one of the things that they made is a t-shirt with your saying that became famous during SideQuest Side Sesh of Norse Foundry for all your random number generating needs. Good slogan. Good slogan. And so they made a t-shirt with Skid on it. If you don't follow Skid on Twitter, he posted it there. So go ahead and follow him at Hey Skid. You can see pictures of the shirt that will be for sale, I believe, at some point. I don't think it's up yet, but it will be at some point.
I want this to be the best selling t-shirt in Norse Foundry history. So, people, please do your part. This is my deepest hell desire. Come on.
That would be amazing if they were just like, oh my God, we got to get more of these guys' quotes on t-shirts. They're selling like hotcakes.
That's a whole new line.
The Glass Cannon quote line.
Quote tease.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of SideQuest Side Sesh, that was where this little joke first came up. We started doing a lot more live streaming and during the pandemic from home. And we played a side quest, and it went for a really long time. We played three different modules and a few different character rotations. Your character Karzor is, of course, iconic in my mind of the entire series. And then we come down to the finale a few weeks ago. A finale which, if you didn't hear Troy and I talk about it on Cannon of Fodder last week, check that out if you get a chance, because we delved pretty deep into Troy's thinking behind everything and my thinking behind everything, because it was a very intense and epic episode, epic finale. And to be perfectly honest, I haven't talked to Skid about it at all. We just kind of had, as players, we had a rough night. And then we just went on our separate ways, and we started focusing on our other projects. So I did want to take an opportunity here on air to kick it over to you, Skid, and, just get what stood out to you. You know, any random thoughts, any reactions that you had to the events of the SideQuest finale?
It was funny having a second consecutive adventure end in failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we talked about the Harlem Globetrotters analogy. That's basically the winning percentage of adventuring groups ultimately is anomalous to analogous to the Harlem Globetrotters. But man, the Washington Generals pulled off two consecutive upsets. And we're on the losing end. We broke out all the ladders and the basketball and the string, like nothing worked. So, but it's fine. It was definitely frustrating. Frustrating because the fight went on a long time and it was tense, but any number of dice rolls could have gone or broken our way and it wouldn't have ended up that way. So in that sense, I think Troy did a fine job, like with the game. The one thing, because I watched your guys' Cannon Fodder talking about it, and Troy made the comparison to Dark Souls, and how he wanted a Dark Souls boss fight. But then you rightly pointed out that in Dark Souls, the point is, you get beaten by these things, but then you come back again right away, and you try again and again. And then you ultimately win, which is not an option here for us. It's over. So that's making a tough encounter is one thing, but a Dark Souls encounter doesn't really translate one for one to tabletop role playing. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was something that I had said. It's just you're playing with fire. If you appreciate the difficulty of Dark Souls, but and you want to bring that difficulty to the table, it's playing with fire, because you have to know that these characters, they got one shot. They got one life to live, and so I mean, at that level, obviously things are a little different when you're level 13 or 14, and like Resurrection is like nothing. Though even then, like, I'm not sure. Like, look at Glass Cannon. I mean, as we get now, I guess, fully into book six, really, I mean, this, the Ballista fight is kind of like, man, you're really just getting into it now in the Caldera. Who knows what to expect? I think that there's definite easy TPK possibilities in this book, besides Troy mentioning over and over. But I don't think about resurrection as an option. Like, I'm not like, oh, I don't care if I die, I'll just get resurrected. Like, I don't think about it that way. I feel scared of the danger, you know?
Yeah, me too. It doesn't feel like we have resurrection as an option. It never crossed my mind.
Yeah.
We did the reincarnation with Lork, but that's very different. And even that doesn't seem like something we do again. So I don't know. But hopefully it doesn't come to that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that there's something to be said for you know, having that permanence that comes with character death be a driving motivator behind why you do what you do with your character, and in the case of GMs out there, you know, why you think carefully, you know, before you so quickly dismiss a TPK as something that's just fun or funny. You know what I mean? Like, right. Because of people's attachment to their characters. And by that same token, you also have to not be too attached to your characters. So it's all a balancing act. But it sounds overall like you had a fun time, but it was just sort of crazy that it was two in a row. That's what I'm hearing from you, is that it just really was like, God, two in a row that we failed.
Yeah. Was rough. It's also, I was definitely bummed that there is no more Johnny Halfling. Johnny Halfling is dead and gone. Like, you can't, it's just like, can I bring him in as a character in my side? It's like, no, you can't. He's dead. He is a dead halfling. You can't get any more dead. And when we see him, when we meet him at the beginning of that adventure, that is the beginning of his musical career. He wasn't singing before that. So you can't even have, oh, here's like a Johnny Halfling prequel prologue. It's like, you can't do it unless you're having him preach unsuccessfully to a bunch of disinterested halflings. That's all you can fucking manage, according to canon. So he's gone. He's dead. That I'm definitely bummed about.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I didn't even really think about that aspect of it, is that like Johnny Halfling could be such a great recurring character to just like pop up in other games. So, you know, we don't do a lot of crossing over. In fact, I don't think we've done really much at all, but he's the kind of character I think who would be wonderful to see pop up in other stuff or to reappear if there ever was more side quests. And yeah, so that is a big loss, a devastating loss to the Naish, the loss of Johnny Halfling.
And Rappo too.
That was Rappo Rappo Rumblebeard, brother.
You excise Rappo Rumblebeard out of the world. It's just not fair, I think.
Not even God himself could strike down Rappo.
Not even God himself could strike down Rappo.
Yeah. It does make for a sad future for PF1E characters. But hey, I'm sure we'll come up with more great stuff as needed. I'm not too worried about it. But yeah, well, thanks for getting your thoughts out on that. I was just kind of curious what went into it. But as we talk about these kind of things where it's like, yeah, you get kind of attached, but, you know, just recognize how deadly the game is. Man, talk about a deadly game, at least in the way Troy is pitching it, at least in the way I'm reading it in the rule book, and the way that some of these things can shake out when you're talking about the damage numbers. Cyberpunk Red.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of scary. So for those that don't know, we have started playing Cyberpunk Red, we're looking at a 3-episode demo of this game. And we are now 2 episodes in. I won't go into too much detail on the stream from the other night, just in case people haven't seen it. But rest assured, we get into the nitty gritty of combat and tactics, tactical combat, and the rules. And when you really start delving into them, they do seem, the way damage is dealt and the way, you know, once you're at half your hit points, and by the way, you can take a nice chunk in a round, especially on a crit. You can take a huge chunk of your hit points. When you're below half, you are debilitated, basically, and you start taking penalties to every one of your actions. And then once you get down below zero, it's just a random die roll, or you permanently die every round. And, you know, there's not much of a bonus to that roll. It's sort of based on one of your abilities, and that's it. So they mention in the book that characters die. They die suddenly. They die without warning, which makes sense in a world with shotguns and flamethrowers. You know, it would make a lot of sense if you're not superheroes that you could, you know, if you take a point blank shotgun, you could just get one shot, you know, and not just like, and not necessarily go down in that instant, but maybe go down the next day. You know what I mean? You're just dying. Yeah. You just die. You can't like get over these critical wounds that you've taken, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a neat system. We've really just jumped in and scratched the surface. What were your thoughts on the stream this week?
I mentioned it. I really like that part because I tend to like game systems that make me feel that the world makes as much sense as possible physically, as much common sense is reflected in the rules as possible. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, there's people running around, robot people running around with shotguns and submachine guns and everything. Of course, you know, life can end in an instant, and that's definitely the way it should be. And I mentioned it too. I also like the fact that once you get, I can't remember what the term, it's like bloodied in 4E, but once you lose like half of your hit points, it starts to affect your performance.
Seriously wounded.
Yeah, you get a -2 to your checks and everything, and then things get harder once you've been shot in the guts. It's not as easy to, you know, program a computer. Or it's a little distracting.
I agree with you. I think that it's fun in Pathfinder to go below zero and then have a cleric bring you back up to 2 and be fully able to finish the fight and like be the hero. That's fun, but it's not realistic. It doesn't bring any level of actual feel of realism to it. Whereas, this is, once you take half your hit points, everything else suffers because of it. And then, once you get down to 0, I mean, yeah, you're just a coin flip from permadeath every round. It's interesting, but I think more so what's come out of it to me so far, both in character creation and as we kick off the role playing this week, is the narrative flow, just the way that you're able to tell the story. It seems so natural and intuitive, and it doesn't seem that difficult. It just is flowing, and obviously part of that, the guy who's the tech who's greasing the wheels, so to speak, but literally and in terms of the narrative is Moto Lemmy Overclock, Skid's character. So what I'd love to do in our Grand Fodder tradition that we just started recently is give everybody a peek at Moto's character sheet that hasn't seen it. So bear with me here as I work my my scenes. I think this is right. Yeah, there we go. Look at that. Looking like a pro. So Moto Lemmy Overclock. There's his character sheet. I mean, it is a loaded sheet. These character sheets basically have a full page. The first character sheet page is really just 3 tight columns of skills in small fonts. Apologize to those of you that can't see it that well. I'll zoom in a little bit, but I just first wanted you to see this amazing artwork that we revealed this week, as well as the layout of the character sheet. So, Skid, talk to me a little bit about Moto's character sheet. What are some things that you feel are interesting or important to you in this build?
Well, I was super psyched to roll on the table and get an 8 for intelligence.
Oh yeah, look at that.
Yeah, and an 8 for tech, which are the maximum you can get on start. And they ended up getting 7 dex, which is really good, and 6 reflex and
dex. So, you know, dex, contrary to what you would think of in Pathfinder, dex is the primary stat for melee fighting. So, you know, not only do you have these you know, elements of your abilities to do tech work and also to even, you know, fire a gun pretty damn well, you also have really decent base stats for melee fighting, which is fun.
Yeah, I thought about, because you mentioned, it's like, man, martial arts would be cool. That's such a cool thing that we don't normally do. Maybe I should invest in that, but it didn't really fit my character concept, but that would have been
your Hawaiian
really cool
shirt
thing.
Wearing.
I could justify it. It would be like, it's just silly. She just loves like Bruce Lee. She's got really into like, you know, like Enter the Dragon, like when he's a boy. And it's just like, oh, it's a kung fu, like in a story that, you know, I could totally kind of fit that into his geeky kind of retro hipster vibe, but no, it's fine. So, he has a pretty good body stat and empathy. Is pretty good all around.
He really is. He's not very cool. Pretty low cool.
It fits into the pre-concept very fine. So that's cool. And will is glow. That's fine too. That doesn't bother me. So,
for those that didn't see the first episode, your hit points are generated by a combination of your body and your will, which I thought is a cool idea. It's like your hit points come out of an equation that factors both in. So it's not only the strength of your body, but also the strength of your mind that tells you how quickly, how quickly you become seriously wounded. When do you really start taking those penalties? Because honestly, part of it is mental, which I think is a cool thing that they add that into the mix. The most you can start with on any given skill is 6. So I'm going to try to, at character creation, I'm going to try to zoom in on here a little bit. It might get a little sloppy. I apologize. But I just wanted to show there's only a couple skills here that you took to 6. One of which is basic tech. Another one is cyber tech. Talk to us about these tech skills. This seems to be the heart and soul of your character right here, where you spent your points.
Yeah, so I envision him as kind of a jack of all trades, Mr. Fix-It inventor type guy. So I wanted to invest in basic tech. I just wanted to make him as good as he could possibly be at that. And then cyber tech, I wanted him to really be interested in body implants and being able to modify and repair those two. So those are the two that I really wanted to focus on. And then I did also throw 4 points into land vehicle tech, like working on cars and everything, and weapons tech too. I wanted him to be able to fix up with the guns.
So are all of those ones that you just mentioned in the recommended starting skills for a cyberpunk tech? Or did you add any of those from 0 and bring them up to 4 or whatever?
The ones I can't remember.
Okay.
I invested in pick lock. I know that wasn't on there. I wanted that. That made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I might have invested in land vehicle tech. And then I put 1 point into air vehicle tech also.
Yes, I see that.
Well-rounded as it could.
It's so huge that, and for those that can't see, like, I mean, look at the 8s, the bonus 8 to all of these skills is because you rolled an 8 in your intelligence at creation. That is huge for your class to hit that bonus across all of these skills. So yeah, good for you, man. That's great. Yeah. A basic tech of 14, a cyber tech of 14, and a D10 system. That's a high bonus. That is fantastic. What else of note here? Oh yeah, I just wanted to talk briefly about, speaking of cyber tech, another funny thing that I'm not sure people know about. Why would they know? Is before we went live, you were just like, it's so funny. We're doing like tech check, and you're like, so does anybody have any cyber limbs? I think it's because of your cyber tech here, because you're like, I could work on this stuff. I could upgrade it. I could repair it. I could, you know, and we're all like, no. But you went ahead. I'm going to skip through life path and gear here just for a second. And I want to go down to look at the cyberware part of the character sheet. Is this not awesome? I mean, it is covering. There's an entire section for your right eye, an entire section for your left eye, for your arms, for your brain implants, for your leg implants. I mean, it's just awesome. So for you, I see that you have some micro optics, a tool hand in your left cyber arm, a cyber arm, and a cyber eye. So talk a little bit about your cyberware and why you went with what you went with.
Well, tech comes with micro optics and the tool hand.
Those are
starting cyberware for the class.
What is a tool hand? Does it mean like your hand just becomes literally like a Swiss Army knife of tools that you can use?
Little screwdrivers and
pliers drill. And wire cutters and that's so awesome.
Super cool. Yeah, I love that. I was playing with that a little bit last night. And micro optics, I wanted to have, there's an augment on the cyber optics where you can, it's like a microscope. You can like look at fine detail, which is like perfect, like a jeweler's loop built into your eye. That's perfect for his work. That was something I wanted to do. But unfortunately, I really wanted the cyber arm, and that took all of my spare cash.
Yeah, that's why I didn't do it. Because I was trying to get a little extra in programs and stuff like that. I was trying to get a little here, a little there. If you do cyber arm and character creation with the edge runner way we started, you just have 500 eddies to spend, and bam, all of yours went into the arm.
Yeah.
But then, if this game, please, when this game continues, you know, let's say we get this job done and we get 2 grand in eddies, well, you know, after you pay your rent, you could theoretically, you know, now that you have the base of the cyber arm, you can then start adding on to it. And those don't cost quite as much as the arm itself, I think. Or no, They might cost even more. But either way, you have to have the arm before you can start doing all the cool additional things onto it. So that's something to look forward to in character advancement.
I can also build my own and put them in there. And it works kind of like crafting, where it doesn't cost quite as much and you make a roll, but you can make them yourself.
Oh, that's really
cool.
So
that's what I'll probably end up doing for me.
That's really cool. All right. And then just taking us out on this, I want to look over your life path again. Howard Sternish hairstyle. I love that.
Yeah.
personality, outgoing cheerleader. Just fantastic. But then I love the enemy section. I mean, this is where, you know, we got really into it here with Uncle Dan. And these are all things that you kind of came up with in improv, right? Because of your roles?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Uncle Dan, Harris McCoist, and Archie Booty Doohan. I'm sorry, it's just
Scotty.
Like,
Archie Scotty Doohan.
Archie Scotty Doohan. There he is. Sorry, the font got so tiny on the character sheet there, but yeah. Trying to zoom in on it. But yeah, Archie Scotty Doohan, and that is really what kicked off the adventure. So just really cool that you're able to roll these kind of things, and then Troy can take them and bam, like instantly, just like slide them in to the demo in order to make it personalized. You feel like it's really about you, and that you and your backstory are driving the action right out of the gate, even in the demo. So that's really cool. I once it's all over, I want to talk to Troy about how it's actually written. I wonder if it says like, okay, so they're at this bar now, the day before, take one character's enemy and just have a confrontation develop outside the bar. And then, or if Troy just made that up completely, or because I remember him saying about, you know, reading the demo, he's like, it doesn't read like a typical Pathfinder adventure where it's just like they do this, then they do this, then they do this. You have some options, but blah, blah, blah. In this case, he said it seems to be like sort of generalities, and then they expect you to fill in the gaps with stuff based on the character's life paths. So anyway, really cool idea there. Thank you, Skid, for sharing the character sheet with us. I also think it's just an awesome looking character sheet. It is no frills and just packed with information. And I like that. They keep it tight, packed with information. You can get a lot of good stuff in there. Go ahead.
Well, the thing about a lot of these games that aren't huge games like Pathfinder or Dungeons & Dragons at D&D Beyond is a lot of it is done with fillable PDFs, which this is. And the fields on mine, for whatever reason, are broken. So you see, like, some of the numbers don't add up in the first skill column, because some of these fields are linked to each other in some way that I can't figure out. And I change one number and it'll change another one in another field. And I change that one to make it right, and it changes the other one. So I couldn't get them right. So it made me appreciate kind of the online tools for some of the other games we play, where like Hero Lab and everything, so you don't have to do all this manually, worry about all this, but yeah, the sheet itself is amazing. And yeah, it's great.
Totally agree. All right. I had a little legacy that I wanted to talk about, but you know what? I'm going to skip it because it's going to come up in listener mail. So let's just talk about it in listener mail. And then before we get out and into listener mail, I just want to talk about the GCN Employee Lounge for a second, because you are a mainstay of that place. I've actually been on there more recently than ever, as I'm doing a Demon's Souls playthrough since I got PS5.
I know.
And so happy to share that with you guys if you ever want to stop by the channel. For those that don't know, we have an employee on Twitch. We have twitch.tv/GCN Employee Lounge. It is a place where we just stream video games. It's a very relaxed environment. You can just chat with us. We interact with the chat a lot more and just hang out. Skid, you are a mainstay on that channel. What have you been playing lately, and is there anything we have to look forward to coming up?
I was playing a lot of Crusader Kings 3, which I loved. And I felt bad because I was playing the Ireland campaign, and with one of the updates with the mods I was using, it disabled the game, so I couldn't go back to it, which I was really bummed about, because it had a cool story going and all that. It's like, so bummed. So I started another one in Scandinavia, and so that one's going. I'll probably get back to that at some point. Most recently, I played a game called Airborne Kingdoms, which is really cool game. It's a very stylish city builder, where the premise is you are in this kind of broken post-apocalyptic Arabic infused fantasy world where you have this flying city, and you have to use it to fly around and unite all these different kingdoms that have been severed from each other and kind of bring them back together by fulfilling quests and repairing stuff. And you go around collecting resources to build out this city and like keep it afloat. You got to like make sure you have enough lift and propulsion and food, and you have to get new people. And it's really great. There's no combat. It's really laid back. The music is beautiful. The aesthetics are lovely. It's a really cool game. So I might get back to that too. I've been playing Mars Survival. I might get back to that. Tropico, I've been thinking about getting back into.
Oh, Tropico. Yeah, I know you dig that.
Yeah, and there's another game that I got from the developer called Surviving the Aftermath, which is a post-apocalyptic nuclear winter city builder, and that looks really good. I haven't even tried it, so I might do that at some point, but yeah. That should keep me busy.
Yeah, seriously. Lots of options. Lots to come at twitch.tv/GCNEmployeeLounge. Check it out. Give it a follow. And yeah, because a lot of times we don't really do proper promotion on that channel. So we don't announce too far in advance, because usually it's just when we can jump in
whenever
the lounge,
we do.
Yeah, we don't have it really scheduled very well, which is something we want to change in 2021, especially with you going full time now. We want to have a little bit more of a consistent schedule. Same thing with Grant. I know he wants to do it too. But it's just an intimidating thought with all the shows, with all the tabletop shows we're recording right now. It's very intimidating to think of like setting aside time that is always consistent every week. I mean, I really thought that Cannon Fodder could be consistent every week, and look at it now it's airing at 9 a.m today, because like we just couldn't, there was no other day that we could do these recordings that we have to do. So it is what it is. GCN Employee Lounge, a little bit more relaxed, and that's one of the things that I like about it. So tune in, check it out, check out Skid. But for now, let's move it along and hear from our good buddy Nick. Sing us a song, Nick. Ooh. As we go into a little listener mail.
It's time for listener mail. Gotta get your brain up on it. Time for listener mail. You gotta cue that fucking shit.
I just love how we so brazenly put like a hard F-bomb into like a simple, kind sounding, funky little drop audio in a show at 9 in the morning. It's just, man, we are very desensitized. All right. All these questions that we're gonna have time for today, all coming from Twitter. So thanks to everybody that replied to me on Twitter. If you don't follow me on Twitter, I'm at Joe O'Brien's Brain. You could find me there, and you can get a chance sometimes to submit questions this way so that we can get them on if you can't watch live. Here we go. Let's start with Twerkin' Time. What's up, Twerkin' Time? This is for Skid. You've spoken a couple times about how Rise of the Rune Lords is a bit more dated in its encounters and design. Have there been any changes you've made in this playthrough to rework any encounters or areas? Have you?
Not really. I'll always do little tweaks based on where what kind of state the party is in, or what. If something I feel fits more in tune with the playthrough we're having, just little stuff like that. But no, in general, I haven't made any big changes to anything.
From a design standpoint, yeah.
No, because I'm not good at it. I'm just, that's not my strength. Mechanics are not my strength. So I don't want to
I tend to do that a little bit more often. I love redesigning encounters and stuff. And I will say, though, that it is a slippery slope. It can be a spiral. Like, you can start to do it, and then you can end up creating hours and hours of additional work for yourself for something that ends up being maybe a little more fun for the players, but really not that worth the amount of time you put into it. Yeah. So it's fun for me, and that's why I do it. If it's fun for you, I get it. Don't be afraid to play around with it, but also be careful falling down that rabbit hole. And especially, and I've given this advice a million times, don't change things, design in such a way that it's so rewards the players for what they've done that you make it like attune the rewards to them every time, as opposed to just what happens to be in the place.
Because
you do that too much, and then your players advance in CR faster than you mean to, and then you have to change every encounter. So try to withhold the desire to change that random Lucerne hammer into like a nice longbow for your elven archer that you want to reward, who doesn't have a magical weapon yet. Like, I get it 100%, but be careful, because if you do it too much, you can really get yourself behind early. All right, speaking of our SideQuest Sidestitch conversation, this one comes in from at Condor Camp, asks, what is one thing you wish either of you had done differently during character creation for SideQuest Side Sesh? That final battle was brutal, and Troy's a jerk for changing the rules, but is there something you wish was different from the beginning with your characters?
I don't. I might take another look at my spell, like my bard spells for Johnny. I don't know what I would change it to, but that would be the only thing. I mean, I think for him, I love... he had the bit of luck. He had a bunch of cool stuff. It's just we didn't have enough damage dealing in the party to really be super successful. But for Johnny, no, I don't think I'd change much.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I really wanted to explore that build. The build that I was doing is fully off tank support. You know what I mean? That's really all Zakari was. You know, like his role, he took a lot of attacks and he lasted a long time before he went down. I guess maybe I would change, you know, in exact retrospect because of the situation, I would change, you know, my power attack, for example, to selective channeling. But the thing is, like, every cleric I ever made had selective channeling. You know what I mean? Like, I was specifically trying to do something different, and I thought that there was good rational reason to not use channels as healing within combat. It's a much more out of combat effective thing, where instead I would spend my round killing the thing and ending the combat, then channeling afterwards, and using things like stabilize to just, you know, stabilize somebody during combat, as opposed to needing to channel for them to survive kind of thing. I never felt the channel hit points, the hit points you got from channeling, ever really kept someone fully in the fight, as opposed to just dealing out more damage. But a lot of it is just the way the party worked out. We didn't communicate with each other. You know, we thought it would be fun to just not know and go in randomly live.
Yeah.
And the whole three clerics thing was like, it was just funny. It ended up being like a gimmick, but a gimmicky party can sometimes really not work out. And in that case, it really didn't work out. I think we needed one. What I said was okay. Do I have a regret? Sure. I regret that Zakari wasn't a fully built ranger, with his favorite enemy aberration.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
awesome.
If we had a damage dealing ranged character, we're fine. Not fine, but like we could have been just fine. Really, yeah. We could have. And we could have been fine with our party if the roles went a certain way. So there's that. But I think it was party makeup more than anything, and really the weak link that was Vern. So no, Matthew was awesome, but he had some really good offensive spells that I didn't take. I did mostly buffing spells because I had a lower wisdom. Anyway, this is a fun question from at Peter Mustaine. Hey guys, is there any show that you'd like to see translated into either a tabletop RPG or a video game? I've always thought X-Files would do well as a point and click adventure in the style of a Telltale game. That's a great question. That's a fun one. Skid, I know you're a huge fan of TV and tabletop role-playing games and video games. You got anything to add to this?
Yeah, I got a couple answers. One, I was thinking about Simpsons Hit and Run the other day and how much I loved that game, and I would love for a new version of that to come out. I would love a fully realized Springfield Grand Theft Auto type Simpsons game.
Oh, that's
on
genius.
Current generation hardware. Yeah, that would be really cool. As far as tabletop, X-Files is a great choice. I think Delta Green really kind of fills that mold. And I've talked about Beyond the Supernatural, the Palladium game that was kind of a precursor to that, and Call of Cthulhu. And the other one I would think that would be, it's a setting that I love so much, and they did reboot it, but not very well. And something that I would love to see adapted now is the miniseries, the original miniseries that aired on NBC in 1982 or whatever it was. That would be a really cool tabletop role-playing environment. I would love to do that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
For me, I think that it could all come out of Delta Green. That for me, it's like anything could be translated into Delta Green. So here are the two things that jump out to me, and they're really just among my favorite shows. Actually, you know what would make, I think, a really good video game would be Breaking Bad. I think you could make Breaking Bad a really cool adventure video game.
Yeah.
Between, you know, traveling between the U.S. and Mexico, and between, you know, playing different factions off of and against each other and gaining rep with different factions and that kind
and
of stuff.
And having the double life doing with the family.
Right. And that's the thing that Delta Green covers is like the bonds, right? Like those mechanics are really cool. And that's what Breaking Bad is mainly about. It's like you have to maintain this certain thing for your family, but then also go and do this other life. It's a cool basis for a game or a show. You know, I think it's a little tough to be like, oh yeah, let's publish a video game just about, you know, drug dealing and killing people. I don't know. I mean, I guess there's games about, you know, Grand Theft Auto is as nasty as it gets, gang warfare, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I just hesitate because it's such a sensitive environment these days that like I tend to like balk at like really, really violent or really vice-based concepts for games. They're supposed to be fun, but I just think it could translate pretty well. And then the other one is The Wire, which would be 100% covered by Delta Green, but you'd have to really add a couple elements in and you remove the supernatural element. But I think that Delta Green does a good job of that. Like you can play Delta Green without overt supernatural elements. You can just have it based on the human beings and what's going on between them, the bonds and the combination of. So here's what I mean by Delta Green. You use Delta Green to play an X-File style game or a Wire style game. What do I mean by that? I mean, just a game where your campaign is essentially a long term case. Like a big case that you know is going to take a really long time to come together. And the players have choices of whether they want to do things like wires, literally, or surveillance or whatever. But then they have to get budgets approved and they have to do die rolls with their, you know, superiors and with the Justice Department and all this kind of stuff to like get the things that they need in order to. And when their roles fail, they have to find another way to like make this legal and get things that they can actually use as evidence. Like that's what that show was like. They would actually get turned down a lot for stuff. And you'd be like, oh, this is so frustrating. Like they could easily solve the case now if the government just could, or the Justice Department could just see this, if the Attorney General would just let them, if the DA would just let them, you know, so that I think could make a fun and interesting game.
Yeah. Good question. That's why that show was so good was because it wasn't just about the crimes and the investigation. It was about systems. It was about government systems and systemic poverty and all the stuff, the way that everything interplayed with each other. And that seems like it would lend itself really well to a tabletop role-playing system.
Yeah. You know, I'm also talking about that system as if the PCs were the law enforcement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, there's so many opportunities for other angles of that story. There's the media, there's the actual perpetrators or those that are related to the perpetrators. And there's those that are just beaten down by the system. And there's, I mean, God, so many options, I think. I'm going to put it together and we'll put together a pitch for LaValle.
Cool.
Dude, you don't think if I went to Troy, was like, let's do a wire-based Delta Green campaign. You don't think he'd be like, yes?
I'd be very excited. And then he would drive himself to an early grave trying to realize it.
Yes, he would. He'd be so miserable. Yeah. Everything else on the network would fail and fold. The company would collapse in on itself as he tried to make that a reality. Yeah. All right, let's keep it moving here. Jay Twex asks, have you ever thought of doing a digital or physical comic book type thing for any of the adventures? Everything is so epic and cinematic the way you guys describe them, and it leans into storyboard panels. I'll let you take this one, Skip.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do this for quite some time. I know some people in the industry, some people that would be really good at making this happen, but there's just a bunch of different reasons why it's very difficult to do right now. But it is something that I would love to make happen at some point down the road, certainly.
Yeah, I think that there's a certain stars aligning element that has to happen that just hasn't come through yet. But I know Skid has been the champion of it in-house. So rest assured, he's got your back.
Oh, yeah.
And as a huge comic fan.
Morto Lemmy Overclock's got your back as well.
Morto Lemmy Overclock's got your back.
He's got your back.
Yeah, good question, man. We'd love to do it one day. Love to do it if we can make it happen. At Coop Diamond 15 asks, both to Joe and Skid. All right, I'm jumping in on this one. Where do you start your character creation process? Both of you create such great and deep characters. I'm wondering what the first step is. Well, thank you, Coop Diamond. That's very kind. Skid, could you identify a clear first step?
Use the shower. The seed of my idea, the shower, almost every time.
Shower is Troy's toilet.
Right, exactly. I don't want to envision that to start for, but the other thing, and just like watching TV, it was like we're watching a movie. I was like, I'll sit like get a character that I'll like kind of latch onto, and like, what's interesting about this guy, and how can that inspire me to do something in that vein? Because like I've talked about, I think that Nestor came from me watching The Expanse, mm-hmm. and watching what's his name, the character in that show, and it was just. So that it was just like I want to do something kind of like that, but I want to make it my own, and it's just like that will spark a lot of ideas, or just thinking about something I read in a book or whatever. And then yeah, usually I'll be in the shower and bing, like something will come to me, and then I'll just start doing a voice, and then I just go from there.
I definitely do that. So some characters started with a book or a TV show or a movie where there was either a character or a concept that just jumped out at me. I can say Sir Will came right out of my reading of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So I had picked up that compilation that they did of George R. R. Martin's Duncan Egg Tales. Yeah. Nick Lowe handed it to me. He recommended it, handed me the book. I read it in a matter of days.
Did you read the comic?
I did. I read the one book. I think it was only one book at the time that I read. I think I just read the first book.
I think
it
was only the one, but yeah.
The one graphic novel. I read that in Prague. I was on a trip to Prague and I took it with me, and I was like, I'm so excited to be in this sort of, you know, Eastern European, like old school setting to read this Martin sort of inspired story. And I mean, it was Martin's story, but this graphic novel, and I really liked it. But then for years, went by and I mostly forgot it. And then it came in this novelized compilation of three stories. And I read that, and it's just so much about knighthood and, you know, good and people that like corrupt knights and good knights and what makes the difference between the two. And so that is where the idea for Sir Will came out. I really wanted to play a knight. And then other ones, you know, I could say for Lork, like I really just looked at sometimes if you're playing a specific campaign or pre-written module or something like that, or even if your GM is homebrewing, I like to know as much information about the actual adventure as I can. I don't like to come up with some idea and then just work it into whatever adventure I'm playing. I like to know a little more about the adventure and get a lot of detail so that I make someone who fits that story or who is there for a reason. And so when Giant Slayer first came up, they talked about this war-torn village in the middle of Orc lands. And my first thought was that I wanted to be a guard. Just a guard in the town, you know, like a ranger. But then it developed over time into what became Lork. But the first thought was based on fitting someone who easily has a reason to be there and easily has motivation to save that town. Don't make it hard work for myself, like having motivation to save the town. And then the only other way is the way, like, for Cyberpunk, where it's just like, I literally read classes, and the class that jumps out at me, mm-hmm. I pick, and then I'll reverse engineer a character from that. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways I go about it. All right, this one from at Op Cardboard, Oppressed Cardboard asks, what's been the most busted combat you've played in Pathfinder or on the show? And could you deal with it in game? If not, did you have to make some out of game decisions / retcons to keep the game going? I'm a little confused by that, so I'm just going to make that more of a GM question. Have you ever, as a GM, Skid, got yourself into the middle of a combat that you were like, this is wrong, this is busted, something's wrong here, and had to change things on the fly, or had to retcon anything after the fact?
Yeah, retcon, no. Well, I guess, but it's more sometimes you guys will get into trouble. You'll be in a place you shouldn't be yet, and you won't be ready for it. So I will change stuff on the fly. Like, there's something recently in Legacy where that happened. And so what I will do is I will try to even the scales a little bit by finding a way for the enemies that you're facing to act suboptimally, but justified within a story context.
Hmm.
So, did we get to this fight? The shadow?
Wait, I'm sorry. Were you talking about Legacy?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's this episode. That's this week's. All right. Yeah, it's the shadow fight. Yeah.
So, the shadow, so they were in no way equipped to win this fight as it stood. So I had one of the shadows become fixated on Joe's character, on Foley, and trying to just, it was the first creature it saw, so it was just going after Foley. Foley left the room. It can't leave the room. It keeps trying. So that basically took it out of the fight and gave them a fighting chance. So that's
yeah. And it didn't seem forced, and it made narrative sense, and right. Yeah, so that's so funny, because then my next question was going to be from at the Grace Rogers, who asked, Skid, the latest combat in Rise is rough for parties without a cleric. Obviously Rhapsody's Blade made a difference, but did you consider altering that encounter or giving the PCs any items that might help their success? So yeah, there you go. That's what you did. You took one out of the combat by fixating it on a character it couldn't reach. Which is a cool idea. It's almost like broken AI in a video game. You're like, yeah, I'll take advantage of it. I'm not going to complain about it. good question, Grace. And yeah, so thanks for helping us out there, Skid. Let me see. Just a couple more, and then we're going to get going. There was one that I saw here. Oh, this one from at the great Kevin. This question is for both. If Paizo came to you to develop a new class or archetype, what would it be?
No idea. I don't know. Again, not my forte.
Not game designers. We just play. We're just done and play.
No, I have no idea. I think pretty much everything that I could think of is reflected somewhere in the rules I would think. So I don't know.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, because here's what I'll do is I'll say something, which I'm going to do. And then people will just write in and comment what an idiot I am that I don't know that's an archetype that's been around forever. But I will say I did create an archetype once. I might have mentioned this before, but in our game with our friend Chris when he was running a game. It was really more of a prestige class than an archetype. But I have always liked the concept of trying to merge, and maybe it's a little overpowered, but trying to merge the concept of a rogue with the concept of a paladin. So those two things seem so at odds, because one seems so lawful and one seems so naturally chaotic. But the rogue, it's less about the personality and the alignment of the rogue, and more about the fleetness of foot, the dexterity, the acrobatics of the rogue combined with the paladin, where you traditionally see a paladin being heavy armor wielding or heavy armor wearing, long sword wielding, sort of, you know, the light of God leads your way, warrior, knight. This would be more of what I called it was a divine assassin. So it's kind of like someone who is sent you know, like think like wasn't that in, was it?
Radiant.
no, that the oh my god, I'm such an idiot. The Da Vinci Code. Wasn't there like a hyper extremist religious, like almost monkish guy who's like the villain, and he's basically like an underling of this organization, and he's just sent out to like murder enemies of the faith. Like it's that sort of idea where you're like a divine assassin is the way that I put it. But really, because I love dex builds and I love ranged and I also love two weapon fighting. I love things that where you're quick and fast and light on your feet, but I also love religious based, faith based, you know, motivation and direction and clarity on the good end of things usually. So I don't know, an archetype that sort of combines those elements I've always thought interesting. The other thing that I added to that was I enjoyed this idea. I replaced Smite Evil with a ranger-like ability, which I called Smite Divine Enemy. And it was basically like, it didn't matter if they were good or evil, it just mattered if they were in an opposed alignment to your deity. And that, you know, you could use that to get ranger-like favorite enemy bonuses. So, you know, bonuses to hit and damage and to perception and stealth against and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, it was cool. Kind of something I threw together years ago now. All right, let's do one more. I feel like that's a question we've had before. But yeah, you know what? I'm just going to end on this one because it's a fun one, and we'll close it with this. For those that haven't heard us talk about this, I think we talked about this in an after party once. End it with a fun one this week. SSBM Jackie, at SSBM Jackie asks, favorite PCs that you guys weren't the players of. This is a conversation we had in an after party once on our Discord. If you ever want to join those after parties, it's at the $10 tier on our Patreon. But we had a very informal chat about that before. And honestly, I don't remember all my answers. But is there who stands out to you, Skid, as some of your favorite PCs that you didn't play?
Rafo. Because you guys got me into pro wrestling. Like, I was into it as a kid. I remember it would come on Sunday mornings at 10. I would watch it, but then I just like didn't really keep up with it. And I always just like thought of people who did like it as total losers. So I was just, that's not for me. But you guys got me into it because part of the thing, people who don't follow it, and the impression that I had was like, well, these idiots, they think that it's like boxing. Well, not like boxing, but. This is a sporting event where it's just like, wow, who's going to win? I can't believe that guy won. It's just like, he's so good that they don't realize that it's all fixed. And it's just like, no, people know that it's scripted. It's a soap opera with sweating and back injuries. That's all it is. And it's awesome. I love it. So Rafo, like, bringing that energy into it is amazing. And then Dahlgreith is actually another one.
Oh, cool.
Really, it was... I love his kind of fame and prestige that he kind of brought in, that Pembroke kind of thrust on him.
Yeah.
And then the horrible luck too that he's had that he got from you. So it's
right. It's a comedic character, I feel like. Yeah. It didn't originally start that way, but it really has become, you know, it's just a funny concept. And I enjoy it thoroughly.
And his enthusiasm too. I love his outlook on life is infectious.
Yeah. And I'll put that right back at you. I feel the same way about Pembroke. I feel like I've had a few concepts that I've just had to scrap because I'm like, as I get into it, I'm just like, wait, this is just Pembroke. I'm just building Pembroke and I'm doing Pembroke's voice. But I've always liked the idea of the older, you know, the older wizard that is, you know, learning all of these abilities and just, you know, the wisdom and the experience of years and the calmness with which they address things. And it's just a character that I think is awesome and I love to play. Mm-hmm. Young wizards, it's kind of interesting, but there's an immaturity to it that is, I'm exploring right now with Atticus. And so I've enjoyed that, but there's a cool thing about Strange Aeons where like it allows you to explore the dark side of magic. You know what I mean? The darker sacrifices that you make in order the blood magic, you know, to get powerful and stuff. And so I like those kind of ideas as well. trying to think of who else. I mean, Baron. I really like Baron. Like, I would love to play Baron because just shooting everything and killing everything and, like, just, it's just got to be so fun. Being so mechanically effective has to be a blast. And then, I think that's probably it. I'll tell you, I you know who else I really, really like as a character so much, outside of mechanics and stuff, is Gish. I really like the character of Gish.
Yeah.
He's so clear to me and makes a lot of sense, and he's very likable, and he's a good dude. Mm-hmm. And that sort of pure goodness without being overbearing is so refreshing. And so I've even had Azura getting a little bit more, you know, like trying to connect with Gish. And that's just what happens. Like, when you as a player really like a character, you're like, I want my character to talk to that character more. And and I trying to connect on us not being human and all that kind of stuff around all these humans has been fun. And man, we are just, it's not that far away, right? Like, Raiders is over the horizon, because as we approach the end of book one of Legacy of the Ancients, when we finish that book, we are returning to our adventure in Raiders of the Lost Continent. So are you preparing for that? Are you reading into that? Are you getting ready for that?
Yeah, I'm more kind of mentally preparing. I'm trying to think back. I haven't cracked the books again or anything, but I'm really focused on Legacy right now because it's just so hard. But yeah, I'm ready. It's going to happen very soon. You guys are almost finished with book one of
Rise of the Rune Lords.
And so when we left Raiders, you guys were at the end of book two.
That's right. Of that
AP. What the fuck? What AP is it?
Ruins of Aslan.
So you're at the end of that book too. So my thought,
now you just know it as Raiders of the Lost Continent. Your right. title.
I know. I totally rebranded Paizo's Adventure. So, but you guys are near the end of that book. So we're going to finish that up and then do book three of that. So there's a lot of that is coming up on the horizon. And book three is really, really cool. And I am excited to get back to that story and those characters for sure. So
yeah, awesome. All right, well, we're going to call it there. Thank you guys so much for tuning in live. Those of you that did, we appreciate it. We will be back again next week, next Friday, with a special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Kate Stamos is going to join me on Cannon Fodder next week. You'll get a chance to talk to Kate, ask her your questions, get to know a little bit more about her. She's been a thrill to work with on Cyberpunk Red, and I'm so glad she's cutting out a little time for us on the FOD next week. So join us then for that. Otherwise, I don't know if there's any big news. Tune in to Androids and Aliens tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/theglasscannon. The adventure continues as we go deeper into the vast. Really exciting stuff. All in all, it's just a blast. A really fun time to be watching the network. And so enjoy that, and then we'll see you next week for the finale of our Cyberpunk Red demo. Until then, Skid, thanks for your time. Appreciate you hanging out. Thanks for those that tweeted in questions, and we'll see you guys next time.
Good night.
We'll be right back.